Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th of November, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we got news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Let's start with our story of the week, at least our poll of the week. Some users of the new MacBook Air have been reporting frustrating problems, such as random screen flashing, the appearance of horizontal or vertical lines, and in some cases, different colors filling the screen just before the computer crashes. While Apple is looking into a software fix for the problem that has surfaced in its support forums and on YouTube, perhaps the problem stems from Apple rushing to get the MacBook Air to market so it could capitalize on its iPad success. Apple is still working on finding a way to stop the kernel issues and strobe light effects, but for now it is allowing users to exchange an affected MacBook Air for another one. Users have found that rebooting the computer seems to restore it back to normal, or at least until the screen goes wonky again. So far, Apple hasn't commented publicly on the problem. However, the MacBook Air's bugginess is such an obvious visual assault that it's hard to believe that no one at Apple saw it before the machines were shipped to stores. It's not as if the MacBook Air didn't receive a lot of hype. Its commercials are still in heavy rotation, and it is the star of Apple's recent Back to the Mac event of the month, last month. Reviews were so glowing, and no one seemed to breathe a word about screen problems, so it's likely the bugs will appear only with extended or repeated use, all things that should have been caught in the testing phase. Don't think it's because Apple skimped on the hardware. The MacBook Air is not a cheap laptop. It owes its thinness to being strategically built with a custom solid-state drive by Toshiba. The 11-inch model starts at $999. Its 13.3-inch model starts at $1,299. But most people probably pay at least a couple hundred bucks more for memory, especially since the machine can't be upgraded or modified once you buy it. Was Apple under the gun to produce something exciting for its latest publicity blitz? It's likely that without any new iPhone or iPad announcement, Apple pinned its hopes on the MacBook Air. It certainly could become the hottest new laptop, especially now that businesses and consumers have been embracing Apple by buying the iPad in record numbers. But maybe Apple failed to scrutinize the slim computer closely enough. Were the reasons that made Apple not fix a faulty antenna on its iPhone 4 the same reason that no one fixed the MacBook Air screen? Perhaps someone noticed and voiced concern, but either it wasn't considered a deal breaker or Apple decided it was more important to push the product out than to waste time on a fix. It's too bad that Apple apparently didn't learn from its previous experience with the iPhone and didn't wait long enough to put out a quality product that wouldn't hurt its reputation. New MacBook Air users experiencing problems can make contact with the nearest Apple store or call Apple Care for options. So that leads us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And the poll of the week is MacBook Air problems. And your choices are typical new hardware woes, typical shoddy quality control by Apple, typical shoddy testing by Apple, and typically, I couldn't care less. Now, I know you'll have more to say about this, particularly all you Apple fanboys and fangirls. So when you are done marking your poll, please check the little yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you'll be able to take the poll, which is, what do you think of the new MacBook Air problems? And, of course, that's our question to you. Have you seen the new MacBook Air? What do you think? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. But before we do that, we have a very special guest today. We have with us Tammy Neely, who's the Senior Director of Corporate Communications.
Tammy, you're there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Oh, can you turn me up a little bit? Because I'm having a little trouble. At LifeLock, she's a Certified Identity Theft Risk Management Specialist. She's been with LifeLock since May of 2007. She developed the LifeLock Speaker Series, community relations initiatives, highlighting the success, sharing the vision of LifeLock, and she's here with us today to do exactly the same. So, Tammy, first I have to say you are from Rockford, Michigan. I was excited until I realized it was Rockford, Michigan, not Rockford, Illinois, which is where my daughter's going to college.
Okay.
But it did excite me. I don't know where Rockford, Michigan is.
It's just north of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, there you go. So you're actually, and where are you now? You're down in Chicago?
I'm in Phoenix.
Well, you're in Phoenix. So you've left the cold and the wind and the snow entirely.
Absolutely. And I said, take me to where there's palm trees and sunshine year-round.
Yeah, I get that. And so tell us a little bit about LifeLock and the risk of identity theft.
Does is we're a proactive identity theft protection company. What we want to do is we want to help protect our members from becoming that next victim of identity theft.
Let's start with what is identity theft.
Okay, identity theft is when someone takes your personal information, so maybe your name, your birth date, your social security number, and tries to go out there and get something they either can't get on their own or don't want to be held accountable for on their own, and then they use your information and you're left what cleaning up the mess. You're left with the debt. You're left with the tickets or the fines or whatever it may be. But they've gone out there and used what you have created as your good name to take advantage of you.
Now, this is more than just stealing your credit card.
Oh, absolutely. Credit card identity theft is really only 16% of what encompasses all types of identity theft.
Right. This is people who actually assume your identity for the purpose of all kinds of nefarious things.
Oh, yeah. They can assume your identity to gain employment. They can assume your identity to file your taxes and claim your refund. They can assume your identity to go out and get medical procedures done. They can assume your identity if they get pulled over for a traffic violation and they don't want to have to be stuck with a ticket. So, you know, it's really incredible what they can do once they access your personal information.
So what sort of things, I mean, how do you protect against that?
So what LifeLock does is we use an advanced network to see anytime anyone tries to apply for an application using your name. So, you know, we're going to see it even if you're doing it. But if you're doing it, guess what? You're going to use your right name, address, social security number, date of birth. You're going to have your correct information. That doesn't send an alert to you. What happens is if someone goes out there and whether it's applying for credit, applying for benefits, using your name and social, but maybe a different address, a different birthday, a different phone number, that's an alert that says, you know what? The rightful person isn't going to be putting the wrong information down. So that sends an alert to you right away to say, hey, looks like something's going on. Not you doing this, is it? And if you say it's not, then we'll get it stopped immediately.
That's very nice. That's excellent. And the things that people need to be careful of, how does somebody steal my identity?
Oh, goodness. Well, let's think back throughout your lifetime. How many people have you given your social security number out to? Every employer, every doctor, dentist, every bank you've had, credit card provider. The DMV has it. The IRS has it. So your information's out there. Identity thieves know that. They don't need to go and steal your wallet anymore, steal, you know, a purse to get that information.
That used to be rummaging through your trash.
Think, who houses all this information and who probably doesn't have the best security? Now, no knock to dentists out there, but, you know, when I think of a dentist, I think, you know what, they've got the best care of my teeth in mind. I don't think, oh, I bet they have the greatest security measures to keep my name, my address, and my social security number safe. Identity thieves know that. They're going to attack those types of systems to get hundreds or hundreds of thousands of pieces of personal information.
Right. And, of course, we've now got laws that say all that stuff has to be digitized by, what, 2012, 2015, whatever that is?
I'm sure that's great, but what government agency is holding you accountable for having the highest level of security in place? What plans do businesses have to have in place to say, okay, I have limited, only three of my employees have access to this personal information, and they each have to go through a unique password, a fingerprint scan, all of this. Unfortunately, yeah, we can have laws, but who's gonna mandate these laws, and are they strong enough to really protect our information and keep us safe?
Right. So what can we do as individuals to keep ourselves safe?
Well, obviously we have to give it out to these places, and, you know, as we're giving it out to new places moving forward, we'll ask the question, how do I know it's safe with you? What if somebody accesses my information? What are you going to do for me? You know, we can ask those questions. Also, for those of us that are online and maybe we're saying, you know, we want to share music, we want to share videos, downloading any sort of file sharing program, any peer-to-peer networks, these are dangerous programs. So many of us have heard of LimeWire, but there's also BearShare, FrostWire, Kazaa, you know.
Right.
They took place after Napster was legislated and said, hey, you can't be, you know, pirating music. You can't be sharing music. People have to pay for it. So individuals now are going and downloading these file sharing networks in the hopes of, you know, sharing music or sharing files for free. So what you do, let's say you download a program like FrostWire. You're saying, hey, I want to open the back door to my computer so I can join this network. And by joining this network, I want to type in and search for the latest Carrie Underwood song. So I type that in the search engine just like I would on Google, and it's going to open the back. I'm already connected to all the hundreds of millions of computers around the world, excuse me, that have this software program on it. And it's pulling up any file on any of those computers that has the word Carrie Underwood in the name of the file.
Right.
So now that's great for me because I'm able to steal whatever, excuse me, not steal, because you have agreed to let me come in and take whatever I want. But imagine if I wasn't looking for music. Imagine if I was looking for tax return and I typed in tax return.
Right.
Well, the bad guys can do the exact same thing that we're doing if we're trying to steal music by typing in tax return.
Right, and for everybody listening here, how many of you are running one of those programs like BearShare or LimeWire or one of those, and also has somewhere on your computer a file titled Passwords?
Oh, exactly. And, you know, you think about that. There's people out there that are creating a file called Passwords, that are creating a file called Credit Card Information.
Yep.
Because heaven forbid their wallet gets stolen, they need to know the phone number to call American Express and their account number. Well, I'll tell you this. If your wallet gets stolen, you can go online or you can call information and get the toll-free number for American Express. You don't have to have your account number when you call them and tell them it's stolen. As long as you know your Social Security number and your password, you can report it stolen. You don't have to have that number. So saving files like that is just silly. And then going back to tax returns, you know, how many of us are filing electronically and then getting that PDF version of our tax return? I know that I am.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I don't have software program. I don't have file sharing programs on my computer, so I name it 2009 Neely Federal Tax Return. Well, if I had the software, the bad guy typed in tax return, my file is going to come up because that's in the name of the file.
Right.
He or she now has access to my name, my address, my social, my husband's name, social, our son's name and social. We were fortunate enough as a family to get a return this year, and we're impatient and didn't want to wait for them to mail us a check, so we said, let's do direct deposit. So I put my bank account number and my routing number there.
Mm-hmm.
One-stop shopping for identity thief, and he or she now has access to my personal information, my husband's, and our son's.
Yep.
And can directly access our savings account because that's the number that I put there. So one-stop shopping. Let's make sure that we remove these types of programs from our computer and don't allow ourselves to be that vulnerable to be potentially compromised by an identity thief.
Right. Every day we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America and think nothing of it. And it's even worse when you're online and you're filling out forms and you're doing all this other stuff. And as you said, you know, keeping track of information in the privacy of your computer. And then opening it all up with BearShare, LimeWire, FrostWire, Kazaa, all of those. Because they share your entire system.
You have allowed them. You have accepted
right.
and invited them in to do that. So we can't turn the blame on them. We have to turn around and look in the mirror at ourselves. We opened that door. We said, come on in. Come on and take whatever you want.
Right, right. If you were to report a theft to the police, and they came and saw that you didn't have a front door, and so, well, what's the story here? Well, I don't have a front door. And what about that big sign on the lawn that says, come on in, everything's free?
Exactly.
Well, I didn't think anybody'd actually do it. Oh, okay. Fine. Yeah, I get that. And so this is something we all need to pay strict attention to, and I thank you for bringing it to our experience, to our attention. I'd be interested in knowing, for all of you listening out there, how many of you are running these file sharing programs and have taken absolutely no precautions?
For those of your listeners that say, oh, I don't have this on my computer, guess what? Do you have a teenager in your house?
Yeah.
You may have it.
You got
it. Does that teenager have an iTouch or an MP3 player of some sort? Ask that teenager, how many songs do you have on there? And then figure it out. because if they're going to iTunes and buying it legitimately, that's 99 cents to $1.29 per song. Do the math. Do they really have $400,000 worth of songs on there? Where are they getting it from? They could have downloaded this program to your personal computer and be exposing you without you even knowing.
And my other favorite part about this is I know people who come to me and say, oh, I got a virus. I don't know how I got it. Do you have a file sharing program? Yeah, that means yes. And did you ever have the experience of downloading a song that didn't play? Yeah, once or twice. I just assumed it was a bad download. No, it was probably a good download, but just because it said it was the latest Carrie Underwood song doesn't mean it actually was. You're infected. Mm-hmm. And
bad
you did it to yourself.
For you, good download for the bad guys.
Exactly. You did it to yourself. You can't even blame somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah. We. I also I work at a university. And I got an email, a letter, one, an actual letter, and it was from Universal Studios, and I thought, excellent, discovered it last. It was a lawyer who wanted to sue me for downloading a movie. Well, it wasn't me, but I'm the systems administrator for my area, and so all the computers are registered to me, right?
Yep.
So I called him, and we figured out who it was, and that person got into an awful lot of trouble. And it turns out that Universal had actually seeded that program themselves, that movie themselves, so that they could catch people.
Yeah.
Listen, Tammy, we're out of time, and I definitely want to thank you so very much. Tammy is the Senior Director of Corporate Communications for LifeLock. She was kind enough to come and talk to us about identity theft, and we really want to thank her for doing so. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Linda Wildman. Please join me middays, 10 to noon on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get to the phones, because I know we have a couple people holding on, first, I really want to thank each and every one of you who was kind enough to pledge during the pledge drive that we had over the last few weeks. You helped us get over our goal for the station, and we really want to thank all of you for becoming members of the Jazz 90.1 family, and especially of the Soundbites family. Thank you so much for all your generosity and for everything that you do for us, and so thank you very much.
But the polka dots did it to us again today.
They did it to us again today. They actually took more pledges today. The thing is over, and they still took pledges, and now they were mocking us.
Yeah. There's the grins. I didn't think they were going to make it out the door. You know, they were smiling. Yeah. Oh, see, it's over, and see if you can get this. And it's like, geez, Louise, you guys don't let up.
No, they don't. But we have and also we want to thank all of our loyal fans who came out last Saturday. We were at Frontier. You got to see me polka.
Yes, and that is on our website.
It is on our website. We had a great time. We want to thank all of our friends who came out to visit us. And for those of you who missed it, we have good news.
Yep, we're back.
That's right.
Again, we're getting out again.
Yes, they're letting us out, and I get to just this time. I'll remember to bring my laptop.
Yeah, there's not going to be any wireless there.
Well, then all right, I won't.
All
right. Anyways,
I have a really long wire in the truck.
Next week, we're going to be at the Memorial Art Gallery for the first annual holiday sale at the Memorial Art Gallery, and it's going to you're going to be able to get in early. So it's only $5 for adults, and kids under, I think it's 12, are free. So you can come and see the show, do the show live from 12 to 2. Plus, you're going to be able to kind of, maybe preview the stuff that's going to be on sale. I mean, Laurel Ann and the whole crew here have been busting their butt to get some really great stuff for this sale. You're not going to want to miss it. And, like I said, we're going out on the road again, so you'll be able to come and join us and take part in being with our show. And who knows, we might even get you on mic.
And, to ask your questions.
To ask your questions.
Or just to chit-chat.
And, if you got any paraphernalia you want us to autograph, we do that, too, willingly, because it's just the way we are. But we'd like to see you folks. And if you get a chance, you know, you can call the station and get your tickets. Again, they're only $5. Mere $5. You can come down, have a great afternoon, and see some great stuff that they've got put together. So, again, come down next Saturday. Put it on your calendar. At least between 12 and 2, you can get in ahead of time because the sale doesn't open until 1, I do believe.
Right.
1 o'clock. So you're kind of, yeah, it's going from 1 to 5. So you're kind of getting in a little bit earlier and get a sneak peek.
How cool is that?
Doesn't get any better than that.
All right.
Where was that again?
It's the Memorial Art Gallery.
Yep.
Next Saturday, noon to 2, Soundbites Live.
Which is on University Avenue near Prince.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. For those of you who don't know, it's on University and Prince. All right. We're going to go to the phones now, and our first caller is Cheryl. Welcome, Cheryl. Where are you calling from? Oh, you're calling from Rochester. What can we do for you?
First, I want to thank you for your show. You guys have taught me a lot, and
thank you.
I want to thank you. I have a wireless Linksys wireless and router that somebody set up for me, and it was working okay. I have it connected to my desktop, and then I was getting on with a laptop and also my iTouch. The password that the person put on it was not real secure, so I went in. I'm not a real great computer person, but I kind of got on and figured out how to change the password to a more secure password, and my desktop is working fine connecting to the internet, but now I can't get on with my laptop, and I can't connect with my iTouch. I try with the iTouch, and it asks me for my password. I put the password in that I put on the router, and it says it's unable to join the network. So I don't know what else I need to change besides that password.
Did you change only the password or also the type of security?
Well, that's a good question.
Thank you.
Because it's right now it's on WPA2, and I'm not sure if that's the way it was set up. I may have upped the security level.
Well, that's good. You should have upped the security level. WPA2 is where you want to be.
Yeah.
But if you've done that, then you need to make sure that all the information you put in to the router matches what you put into the iPod Touch and the laptop.
And
so
quite often you need to tell those devices to forget that network,
right?
So it forgets the old connection and the old password in order to add in the new connection and new password.
So I kind of need to reset up the laptop and the iTouch.
Right. Essentially, you go in and you tell it to forget those networks, and then it'll say, hey, guess what? I discovered a brand new network. Do you want to connect to it? And yeah, absolutely I do.
How do I make it forget the old network? This guy, he didn't use like a wizard or anything. He did all this stuff, and I have no idea.
Well, on the Linksys, you can. There's a button on the back.
Well, no, it's not on the Linksys. It's on the computer.
You don't want to change the Linksys. You want to change the computer.
What operating system are you running on the computer?
My desktop, which is working okay, is XP. The laptop is Windows 7.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
If you see the little icon down in the lower right corner for the wireless connection, right-click on it, and you can open up the wireless properties. And in there, you can tell it to forget that network.
Okay.
On the iTouch.
It's in, I didn't left mine in the car. It's in Settings, General,
and you can
network.
Remove it.
And you just remove the...
I think it actually uses the word forget on the iPod.
Oh, well, and on the PC, you can sit there and select a particular wireless network and say remove.
Right.
So, right, you needed to forget all the old connections so you can set up the new connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because on the...
Was it the router's administrator password you changed or the router's Wi-Fi password? Or both?
Don't know if I know that.
If you just change the administrator password, then your Wi-Fi password is still what it used to be, and that's why it's not connecting.
Mm.
So there's two different passwords you can change.
And that's through the router?
The router administrator console, yeah.
Because I went into the, however you do that online, you get in there and in the administrator page or whatever for the router.
Of the Linksys router.
Yeah. Right.
In the administrator page, you change the administrator password. In the wireless security page, you change the wireless password.
I may not have done the other one because I think I was just on the administrator page.
All right, then try the old password again. And see if that works. If that works, then you changed the. Well, you didn't change a wrong pass. I mean, it's nice to have changed that password too, but you might want to then go back in and if in fact you can connect, then you might want to go back into the router and change the security password as well.
And on Windows 7, to forget a wireless network, it's in Control Panels, Network and Sharing, Manage Wireless Networks, and select the network and hit Delete. And I'll have that link up on our system.
Okie doke.
All right, I'll give it a try.
Let us know how it works out. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's always annoying. You have to tell your computer to forget the old password so it can remember a new password. And there's too many passwords to change, too. Knowing which password you're changing is interesting, too. So it's and as we've said in the past, it's a very good idea to put a password on your wireless network so that bad guys don't sit outside your house and do bad things, because then the police show up at your door and you get arrested.
Right. It's always best to do that. All right, our next caller is Don, who's either listening to us on the web or calling from Webster.
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 I'm listening to you on the web.
And you're in Webster.
Right.
So, yay! I was good on both points.
You win twice.
Okay, my problem is I have installed on my computer Logitech telephone calls or whatever you want to call it and Skype, and Logitech works fine, but about a week or so ago my Skype came up with a little black box that says can't start video renderer, check you've got a valid DirectX installation. I have no idea what it means.
Did you do an update at any time recently?
Yes.
You probably now also need to update Skype.
I did. I updated that.
Did you update Windows at any time?
No, just what they send to you automatically.
The Windows update?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So now you probably did update Windows.
Yes.
It sounds like it's a conflict between the two.
Right, so and it used to work.
It worked fine for almost a year now.
What else changed?
Nothing that I can see.
These are all the wrong answers.
No, I mean,
Have you tried uninstalling Skype completely and reinstalling it?
No, I did not try that.
That might be something to
try. Use Revo, to uninstall it.
Pardon?
There's a program called Revo Uninstaller, and Revo is the one that you want to use to correctly remove stuff.
Okay.
It really removes it. Unlike Windows uninstall programs, which just turn off the bits and really don't do much for you, except make your machine go slower, the Revo will go through and remove all the registry entries and all the folders within.
Okay.
Does
now,
a lot better job.
Is this, when you say you have Logitech something something, is this new to you?
No. I've had this for almost a year.
The camera and everything?
Yes.
And the camera's a Logitech camera?
Yes.
If you go into the task manager.
Yes.
And look at what's running, is there a Logitech camera software thing that's running?
That could be it. The Logitech software is running, waiting for a call, so the Skype software can't run.
Right.
How do you get to the task manager?
Right click on the button bar across the bottom, and on any blank space in that bar, if you right click on it, one of the choices is task manager.
Okay, I see it.
All right, and look to see. Try the first two tabs. And see if something called Logitech is running. And if it is, stop it. Then try Skype.
It says Skype is running.
Yeah.
Soundbites is running.
Good.
Jazz 90.1 is running. That's all that's on there.
All right, what about the next tab?
There's also
processes.
Check,
yes.
Yeah, there's a checkbox in there to show all processes too. You have
yeah,
to
make sure it
on.
Says show all.
I'm looking through the Logitech website to see if they have anything about
it. But anyway, listen, we really need to move on because we got other people waiting. But the basic idea is either if you don't use the Logitech software, uninstall it using Revo.
Okay.
And reboot your system and see if Skype comes back. Because what might have happened is you might never have run the Logitech software, then ran it once, and now it thinks it should run all the time, and it's blocking Skype. That's what we think is happening.
Yep.
Okay.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
Okie doke.
Okay. Yep. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks.
Theoretically, they should work together, according to Logitech's website.
Well, theoretically,
they
should.
Fine, yeah.
That's nice. Good. Many a slip twixt the theory and the practice. We find often enough when people think, well, I didn't do, there's nothing new or different on my machine, but you ran a program that you'd never run before.
Or and haven't now, run in a while.
Right. And now it's running in the background somehow. All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I'd like your opinion on two things. One, the Apple Airport Extreme router and an online scanner called F-Secure.
Steve?
F-Secure, we'll start. The Airport Extreme router is a nice router. It has several functions you don't find in other routers, which is why it costs a little more than some of the other routers. It's a gigabit Ethernet, so your wired ports are gigabit, which you don't see in some of the cheaper routers. And it also has a dual wireless option, so you have actually two wireless networks it can create, and it basically intends one of them to be a guest network, so that when you have friends and guests over to your house, you can give them the password for the guest network, and that lets them get to the internet, but they cannot get to your network and your computers. So it's a safe way to give friends access to the internet without exposing your computers. It also has a USB port on the back of it, so you can plug in a printer or hard drives, and you can share printers and hard drives over your networks, which is handy if you have a laptop. So then your printer is connected to your router so that you can print when you're on the couch and your printer's back over in the office. And you can also connect a hard drive to it for network backup. So you can keep your computers backed up when you're not physically connected to a hard drive. So it has a couple extra features that make it a nice choice. And then their next model up from that is the Time Capsule, which actually includes a hard drive inside the box. So it's a wireless router, a wired router, a print server, a hard drive server, a NAS, all in one little box.
So compared to all the other ones out there, would you consider that one to be the best one?
Well, it has the most features. So yeah, in that case, it's the best. You'll find cheaper routers that just do wireless routing. But if you want the additional features, that guest network is really handy to protect the privacy of your own computers. If you don't have a network printer, you can make any USB printer shareable on your network. So it does add a lot of the extra features, which sets it apart from the rest of the routers.
And what about the F-Secure program? I ran Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware, and they found a few things. And when I ran the F-Secure last night, it found one more thing.
Well, certainly none of these is a problem. I mean, if you can run multiple programs, the real problem is that almost none of these is 100% effective. Being able to run multiple programs is what keeps your machine cleaner. If you've got the time and the patience to run multiple programs, you should probably do that. F-Secure is an excellent program.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And once again, I want to thank all of the folks who are members who have supported us right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Oh, I got to put in a shameless plug.
Here we go.
Well, two things. One, you know, trying to encourage folks to come on down this coming Saturday. We're going to be doing another remote from the Memorial Art Gallery. They have their first annual holiday sale. That's November 13th from 1 to 5. But we're going to let you folks get in early. If you want to come down and see us do this show, the whole shtick from 12 to 2, you can get in. And it's only a mere $5. They're going to have literally tons of sales from crafts, artisans, and other great businesses that are going to be there selling stuff. So, you know, you want to take the time, come on down. The other thing, proud to announce, is coming back on Thursdays.
Yes, you are.
Laurel Ann and I are going to, matter of fact, be up this coming Thursday. And we'll be on from 6 to 9. Doing our show, and then come December, we're going to be taking over. And Rob Linton even says he's going to come in on Thursdays.
Yes, I got to see.
That should be interesting. Yep. But, yeah, we're going to be doing every other Thursday. Laurel Ann and I are going to be taking over the Thursday nights, and should be a lot of fun. I enjoy getting into it. I mean, I've said before, you know, we've only been to Jazz 90.1, what, a little over a year now. And just getting into a lot of the different jazz music, I mean, it's unbelievable. And they turned me loose in that library and let me pick all the great stuff that's in there. And I know I could go another 10, 15 years and not hit all the stuff that's in that library.
Ain't that
so
the truth.
It's great. It's a great time. And, you know, hope you folks will tune in this coming Thursday from 6 to 9 and give us a listen.
Yep.
But all again, right. though, don't forget to get your tickets. For this holiday
tickets. We'd love to see you down there next Saturday.
Another chance. If you missed out on seeing Nick do the polka, you know, who knows what it'll do this coming Saturday.
Who knows?
And you can purchase your tickets online at the jazz901.org website.
There you go. And for those of you who are parents of kids at School of the Arts, that's the parking lot you use every day when you drop them off or pick them up. That's the Memorial Art Gallery. All right, the Windows 7 phone. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. Windows Phone 7. Maybe Microsoft's last chance to catch up on the mobile market. And already, here's a bad piece of news for the launch. There's a good chance potential customers will face shortages and have to be turned away. It's not due to demand, but instead to component shortages. Mobile Magazine reports that the shortages have already hit Europe, where Windows Phone 7 devices went on sale on October 21. Microsoft's primary partner in the UK, Orange, has been giving out £20 vouchers to customers who ordered the phone but could not get them because of shortages. An email went out to Orange stores about the shortage before launch. Mobile Magazine quotes an Orange store manager as saying, "I was shocked when I heard the news. We are the lead partner for Windows Phone 7, but I believe this is a manufacturer issue on a worldwide scale." Business Insider says the shortage is likely caused by scarce supplies of the components used in touch screens. And Seattle Post Intelligencer says it's difficult to sort of understand where exactly the shortages are. But what we're hearing, what we've heard, is some problems around display, especially touchscreens and even the cameras. The Seattle PI also warns that shortages in Europe are most likely will mean shortages in the U.S. as well. This launch is already potentially problematic because Windows Phone 7 won't be carried by Verizon and Sprint. Shortages could make things even worse. So our question to you, are you waiting breathlessly for a Windows Phone 7? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Sean did from Seneca Falls. How are you, Sean?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
I had actually a question about the phones. I'm looking to upgrade. I've been using a regular phone for a while, and now all the phones are the smartphones, and they all require data plans from the providers.
Yep.
And I was just wondering, you know, from phone to phone, is one phone using more data than the other, or like, where would I be using a lot of data? Because they have different plans with different amounts, like a 200 megabyte plan and a 2 gig plan and then unlimited data.
Well,
will I be using, how much would I be using?
It depends on what you do with the phone. If all you do is make calls, then you won't be using any data.
And the point of a smartphone is that you want to get on the internet, and that's where your data usage is.
Well, no, one of the other things, though, that
There's also a feature phone that comes before a smartphone. Typically with smaller screens, they play music, they can play video, but it's not a full internet-enabled smartphone. And if you're just looking at email, that's not very much data. If you go to a lot of websites with pictures, that's a little more data. Or if you stream video, that's a lot of data.
Well, the predicament that I ran into is I just wanted the phone, but I wanted the full keyboard.
Yeah.
And I still had to get one of these smartphones, and the plan there was $9.99 a month, so I could have the keyboard and be able to make phone calls. Because he goes, well, you can also surf the web. I get so many megabytes a month, and it's like, I do computers for a living.
Yep.
I don't need this other stuff on there.
That's the one thing you do often see in smartphones is they're physically bigger because they have keyboards in them to make it easier to type email and web pages.
Yes. Right. But to answer your phone, your question, to answer your question, if you don't use any of the features of a smartphone, you don't even need to buy a smartphone. You can get what they call a feature phone, as these guys said. And that will, you'll still have to have some little plan or other, just for
text $9.99.
Well, their reasoning for that is so you don't get bill shock because you accidentally went to a web page.
Right. But beyond that, you don't need to spend $40 or $50 or $100 a month on a data plan.
Right. Then my second question would be, which phone is recommended for someone who's trying to get into the phone as far as like a user-friendly phone?
I've got the realistic, the Samsung?
Well, again, are you talking...
Every month there's a dozen new phones
that are looking better than last month.
Are you talking about one that's not a smartphone?
No, one that is a smartphone. Like, this is the first time I'll be getting a smartphone, and if I do want to venture into it, I mean, there's like the iPhone, there's the Droid
Who's
phone,
your carrier now?
Yeah,
big question is who your carrier is, and are you comfortable with switching carriers? Because the carrier depends on what phone you get.
Because usually what I would recommend, just like we tell folks with laptops, you know, if you're looking into a different phone, like Steve said, find out who your carrier is. Go to their store. Normally, you can, you know, test drive and, you know, get the feel of all these different phones, how it's going to feel in your hand and everything else, and the different features. You can go from one to the other, right there at the store and ask questions and somebody's going to answer it as opposed to looking on a web page where, all right, I got this phone up, I pull up all the features, now I got to go to another one. You could be right there in the store and cross comparing a lot of phones all at once.
And do you want to be able to download games and other applications to run extra stuff on your phone, or do you just want to make phone calls with it?
Right.
It's actually getting hard.
Much of that extra stuff is what uses up your data plan.
Yep.
Yeah,
good point.
But the deal here is this. I, for example, own an Android phone, and I love it. Steve is a Mac guy. He's got an iPhone and loves it. Dave is old, and he's just got a feature phone and barely remembers it's in his pocket. So really,
no, mine does a lot of butt dialing.
Yes, it does. I can't tell you how many times you've called me.
And a number of other folks, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. When you get a phone that closes like a clamshell, isn't it supposed to prevent butt dialing?
Mine doesn't close like a clamshell.
Oh, well, in that
case,
it
does, but
it opens to give you a keyboard.
All right,
but even when it's closed, it still is a full phone.
So folks can see it on the camera. Mine goes like this, but what happens is when I put it in the pouch and then I'm carrying a computer, it hits some of the side buttons, even though...
Yeah, that's technically called a slider phone. Because
I turn it off. It can, well, it's in the pouch, and if I'm carrying a computer or that type of stuff...
But back to Sean's problem, which is, I'm sure we're all fascinated about our stories, but to get back to your question, check with your carrier. If you're with AT&T, you can get an iPhone or an Android phone, but with everybody else, you're pretty much
Windows 7 phone next month.
With everybody else, it's pretty much Android. So check with your carrier, see what they have, play with them, put them in your hand. Both the Android phones and the iPhones are very easy to use. Each has slightly different idiosyncrasies, but they work very similarly in terms of what they can do and how they do it and stuff like that. So neither one is you know, intrinsically better than the other in any way. It's just a matter of your preference and your carrier.
Okay.
So go play with them.
Let us know.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, it seems to be every month another new phone comes out that's the best phone now because it's a month newer in technology.
Right.
I was reading a blog about a guy. He spent like 6 months comparing all the different Android phones and finally settled on one, went out and bought it. And then the next day, literally, a new phone got announced that was even better.
Yep, absolutely.
So he went and bought that one too, and it was going to play with him for a week because he had a two-week return policy on his phone. So, yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. If you want to be on the leading edge of technology, you never will be because there's always something better coming next week.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Okay, my question is for IBM ThinkPad T22. I start it up. I get the Microsoft XP window, and then all of a sudden it goes to a black screen, and on the screen it says error 0188.b. semicolon bad, CRC2. And then I've researched it a little bit on the internet and went to the IBM site,
mm-hmm.
and it says that it's a error or an invalid RFIC serialization information error or bad CRC2. And then it says the EEPROM checksum is incorrect.
Right.
And it says system board.
Here's the deal. You have either bad RAM or a bad EEPROM.
Okay.
Or in your case, as you said, an EEPROM.
Right, okay.
The EEPROM is essentially the BIOS, the thing that boots up the computer, that has enough knowledge to bootstrap the machine, start it up, go to the hard drive, find the first sector on the hard drive, and then turn over to that what should be done next. But if you can't get that far, if your EEPROM is damaged, then, yeah, you've got a problem. And I don't know where you can get that fixed except through IBM themselves. Well, in this case, Lenovo now. How old is this ThinkPad?
Well, I've had it 2 years. I bought it off of eBay for a couple hundred
bucks.
Yeah,
the T22 was announced in March of 2001, so your computer's 10 years old.
Okay. I guess my question is it time to bite the bullet?
Yes.
Probably.
I'm sorry, but yes, it's time to be dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
Well, and the other thing, though, is it's amazing. A lot of the stores are starting to do pre-Black Friday sales.
Right. That's what I was waiting for. My daughter happened to buy a compact for $300 back about several months ago.
Yep.
Should have bought one then.
Well,
wait another couple of weeks.
The one problem with buying these really super cheap computers is they aren't very powerful.
They're really super cheap.
And they're really super cheap. And when they break in 6 months, you throw it away and buy a new one.
Right. But for what she's doing, she's just surfing the internet, doing her school, homework, that type of thing on it. So she's not really being a big gamer or anything.
Right. Now, I will say I have a Lenovo netbook.
Uh-huh.
And it's the S10e. And it's a workhorse. It's a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Lenovo makes the ThinkPads now, and they're exceptionally good machines. But, you know, 10 years is an awfully long time for something you carry around.
Right. Like, I wasn't the original owner of it. I bought it from somebody. But that was my question. It was just basically I wanted to know if it was like time to buy a new one.
It really is, because getting that one fixed would be way, way too expensive.
If you're lucky, you can download a BIOS update from Lenovo on some other computer and try to flash your BIOS. If you're really lucky.
Well, it can't hurt to try it.
Yeah, that was one of the message boards. That's what a gentleman had mentioned, that he had downloaded a previous version of the BIOS and then got it to work that way.
Right. You could download the same version of the BIOS. I mean, I don't think it's inherent in the thing. It's either a chip that got blasted in some way, static electricity, cosmic rays, who knows what.
Okay.
And flipped and now can't flip back by itself, or it's actually the EEPROM is going bad, in which case you won't be able to fix it, and it's time for a new machine. But it can't hurt to, as Steve said, to try downloading an update to the BIOS and see if that fixes.
The other thing I tried, it does say, you know, push F12 to, like, boot from a temporary device.
Right.
Well, I tried to get it to read a disk in the DVD drive, and it won't go to that.
Right. So you may, well, follow the instructions that you found, particularly if they tell you how to create a USB thing and then boot with the USB disk. See if you can do it that way. Again, if you can't, then it really is just time to
bite the bullet.
hit it with a hammer and buy a new one.
Yeah. I kind of wanted a new one for Christmas anyway.
See, now this is a godsend. It's quite fortuitous that this happened.
Yeah. My wife wants a new laptop, too, and we all want to have laptops instead of having a desktop.
Laptops for everyone.
Yeah.
Sure. Are you adopting? Because I'm available.
Okay.
It's going to be a great Christmas at Bob's house this year, I'll tell you that.
Yep.
Except for Bob, who's paying for all of this, right?
Okay, guys, thank you very much for the information.
All right, thanks, Bob. We appreciate it. Have fun. All right, well, that music tells us something very special is about to happen. It means you've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. And that is an hour you will never get back. But it, luckily for you, there's a whole nother hour to waste. I'm pretty sure two wrongs don't actually make a right, but it doesn't matter because we will be back very shortly for an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites. Again, we want to thank all of you who became members of Jazz 90.1 during the last pledge drive. It gladdens my heart to see people joining the family. And don't forget about the mag. And don't forget about us. We'll be back right around the corner with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 59 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Good old Legman.
The Legman. All right, we're back, and we have Bob from Victor on the line. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for having me on. My question is that I'm looking for, I have a camera, and I'm trying to do some photo editing, and my camera can also take some movies, so I'm doing some movie editing, and I'm jumping around from freeware program to freeware program, trying to find one to edit, one to print, one to organize, and same thing with the videos, and trying to, like, you know, make a movie and then burn it to a DVD kind of thing. And I'm just trying to find, like, some all-in-one program, even if it's two separate programs, one for video, one for photo editing. And I'm just seeing that there's a lot on the market out there, and you know, it looks like people are saying, like, Premiere Elements and
Photoshop
the
Elements
software, the ones to go with. And I was just wondering what your guys' opinion is on that.
Well, both of those are excellent, although I don't know that they're free. Are they?
No.
I'm willing to pay for the program. I was just wondering now.
They actually have a bundle of both.
You know, I got some experience from doing, like, the freeware software, and I just want to take the next step now and get, like, an all-in-one. And, you know, I'm trying to get my wife into it, who's not that computer literate. So I want something that's kind of easy to use, but also I don't want her to be learning the way I learned, which was, like, jumping around from program to program. So,
all right, a couple of things. Before you decide what program to buy, you probably should look and see what training is available for it. So the thing to do is to check with all of the, they don't call them adult learning or evening classes anymore. What do they call them? continuing education?
Yeah,
or
I know the JCC offers quite a few courses.
JCC offers courses. A lot of the suburban school districts do evening courses.
Yep.
So I would check with them and see what courses they offer and see if any of them offer courses on any of that editing software. And then take the courses. See, you know, that's a good place if you can get a start with an actual instructor right there in your face.
I looked into, because I was looking online and like some people were saying that, and I checked with the community college, and you know the programs that they work with is like Photoshop and Adobe Premiere, and
that's all the high end stuff,
right?
Yeah.
$400-$500 programs, and I'm not doing anything that serious. I'm just doing like, you know, photos and home videos.
In the consumer area, it's Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements tend to be the more common ones. And they actually have a bundle going, $150 for both of them.
Okay.
And then lets you graduate up to the full Photoshop and the full Premiere. If you do want to get into something more sophisticated, you've already have the learning curve consumer.
And you've
models.
Tried Apple, Apple. You've tried, what version of Windows are you running?
I'm running Windows 7.
Then you've tried Movie Maker?
I did try Movie Maker. That is kind of easy to go around with, but then I still run into the problem of like some formats aren't supported.
Right.
Because I have some videos that friends have sent me, and then like the friends send it to me in like a .mov file, and then I have to get another program to convert that file kind of thing. And I was looking at like Pinnacle Studio. And Pinnacle Studio has like all these plugins that you can use all the different formats and everything like that inside the program. But then it was just coming down to like I was looking up on like codecs and different ways that it encodes the videos. And I guess it comes down to like, will I get the same quality if I choose, let's say, Pinnacle versus, you know, ULEAD versus Adobe? Like, is it going to be the same?
No.
Output?
Well, you get the same file format. The quality is depending on what codec they're using and what settings you pick. There's always a trade-off of file size versus quality versus compression time. And some of those trade-offs have been put into different standards. If you're making a video DVD for watching on television, it's the MPEG-2 format.
Right.
We're seeing more and more in internet broadcasting, we're seeing H.264 being a better codec because it gives you better quality at about the same file size. So as time progresses, better and better codecs are coming out. And that basically just means that your software evolves over time to get advantage of the better stuff.
Right. So, I mean, theoretically, if I use the same codec, same settings from program to program, the quality shouldn't be affected, right?
Probably not, but you're not going to get the same codec in each program. Each program is going to have its own version of that codec.
Okay. But your guys' vote, I guess, is with then Adobe, then going with Adobe?
The Adobe Elements.
Right. You'll get the most mainstream support from that. You'll find books on that. You'll find a lot of other people using it as well.
But it's not the full Adobe stuff. It's Adobe Elements, which is much less expensive, and for most people will provide all the features they want. Your best bet is to read about it online and see if it, in fact, has all the things you need
and want. I think they have free demos you can download, too.
There you go.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. He's certainly going about it in the right way. He's tried several programs. He's played with different things.
It's almost the problem. There's too many choices. And most people stick with the one that comes with their computer and don't bother looking at anything else.
Right.
Or the one that came with their camera. And it always surprises me that the camera companies put time and effort into building software when it already comes with your OS.
Right. But as he said, you know, if you're using Movie Maker, you don't necessarily have the right codecs, and installing them is a mystery to some people, and it's never an easy thing to do.
And we're sort of seeing a move away from physical DVDs. Apple announced their new iLife suite last week or 2 weeks ago for audio editing and video editing, and they didn't even mention the DVD authoring program. Nobody makes DVDs anymore. You send it to YouTube.
Right,
and
exactly.
And so YouTube needs a much different format than your DVD does, so, you know, different codecs
again. And so many small cameras nowadays are coming with the YouTube button.
Yeah.
Just hit the button up, it goes to YouTube, you're done.
Yep.
Or at least it formats it for YouTube.
Right, which is probably H.264.
Right.
Yes.
All right, our next caller is Joe from North Greece, New York. Hiya, Joe, what do you know?
Well, I need a little information for an old man.
Well, all right, if we can find an old man and give it to you, we will.
I'm trying to upload some videos and pictures. I'm running Roadrunner Lite, and I have AOL as an address. Running XP, I can can't upload anything more than 25 MBs, but I can download anything.
Right. What service are you trying to upload it to?
Well, I'm trying to email them out.
Oh yeah, email is limited to about 5 megabytes.
Well, I got 25.
Yeah, you might get that, but that's true. That's a limit to the email programs that you're using.
Yeah, email was designed for text, and the fact that it can do an attachment is sort of an afterthought. And in fact, your attachment has to get converted into text before it can be sent. So if you're actually looking to share pictures and video, you're much better off going to a picture site like Flickr or Shutterfly or one of the other picture sharing services.
Well, I do have Kodak albums.
Yeah, the Kodak Gallery program they have. For video, YouTube is very common for sending videos to. But sending email typically cannot take those larger files.
Okay. That answered my question. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much, Joe.
In fact, as we were just mentioning between callers there, you know, a lot of cameras now have an upload to YouTube button and a you know, I assume the Kodak cameras are probably going to have a Kodak Gallery button.
Right, what did they used
to call it? Ophoto.
Ophoto.
Ophoto, and now it's Kodak Gallery. Apple has their Mobile Me service, so you know, pretty much most of the cameras have their own services. There's the Windows Live picture sharing service built into Windows. So it's becoming much more common to share your pictures on websites than trying to email them around, especially because of the limitations in the email systems.
Right. And as you said, email is never designed for this stuff.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Stan from Greece, New York. Welcome, Stan. What's your question?
Hi. I have Windows XP 3rd Edition, and I bought for $5 from Mr. Dave Enright to run the Dance the Tango.
Right, right.
Tango. Security Tango, yeah.
And what's happened is I went to Avast from the other one for free.
Right.
Anyhow, in both cases, I could not get to download either Flash or something that would help me to clean up my computer. So every time I get so far, when it tells me I have so many infections and that, and they identify that, but when I go... They won't fix them or remove them. And then they try to sell me something, which is okay. I don't mind. But
generally what's happening there, Stan, is that there are some viruses that can't be gotten at in this way.
It sounds like he's already been hacked.
Yeah.
So you're too infected to clean.
Yes, and this, Stan, this is where it gets into literally where – you have to bring the machine in, and what we do is literally pull the hard drive out of the machine and have to clean it separately initially to get some of the stuff off, and then we put it back in the machine and then continue dancing the rest of the Tango stuff.
If you're very lucky, you can try safe mode and run a scan.
Yeah,
well, Security Tango does that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there just are some viruses, and unfortunately becoming more common, that when you get them, they get so embedded in the operating system, the only way you can get rid of them is to do what Dave does, because when you put this hard drive in a second machine, it's no longer the boot drive.
Uh-huh.
And so those viruses can't infect the machine during boot up, which is the only way they can avoid being removed.
Okay, so my best bet would be to bring it in rather than try to invest.
Yeah, absolutely.
$39 or $59 or
no,
whatever.
No, don't. Do not.
That is a scam. You've already been scammed, and that's I've seen it anywhere from $29.95 to $79.95, and they say, "Well, your machine's infected, and you got to get this program to do it."
Yeah.
They take your money, and then you still have the infection.
Yeah.
Sometimes we call that hostage wear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So if I brought it in, say sometime this week you'd take a look at it?
We'd be glad to.
Well, give his office manager, Sam, a call. She can tell you what's the good day, because Dave's not just sitting around waiting for one computer to come in.
Drop it off, come back in a week.
I know. I have another question. When I bought the disc from you, it was for the dial-up, and I don't have dial-up anymore. I got the Speedo stuff. And,
no, there's no dial-up.
That with the discs you buy, you don't have to download anything. They're already downloaded onto that disc. That's the point of the disc.
Yeah, well, she asked me, Sam did, when I was there. She says, do you have a dial-up?
Oh, what she was referring to as far as doing any of the updates.
Oh, okay.
Because I can guarantee you, I can burn a CD today of all the current programs.
Uh-huh.
By tomorrow, they've probably already got one of the updates.
Oh,
because
okay.
There is so much stuff daily
that
is coming out. And the best way I put it, and Nick and Steve have said the same thing, it's like a game of leapfrog.
Yeah.
We go ahead and get one step ahead, they leap over us. We get one step ahead of them, they leap over us again. And it's an ongoing battle. And folks, matter of fact, I had a client in today who was saying, you know, this is getting awful ridiculous. I'm spending all this money and my machine keeps getting doing. What do I do?
Uh-huh.
And it's,
don't run Windows.
Well, it's just an ongoing battle. I mean, you've got to do due diligence. And, you know, if your software requires you to use Windows, and that's where you're stuck for the time being, you know, if you're in an office environment and that type of stuff. So, you know, you just got to take the time. That's the biggest thing. Folks, don't take the time to run some of the scans, then they get infected.
Yeah, if you're doing what you say you're going to do, do you have any idea about the cost involved?
Call the office.
Call the office.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
All righty.
Thanks a lot, fella.
Take it easy.
Bye.
All right, thanks. Yeah, we're seeing that, unfortunately, more and more, and there's nothing that we can do about it, because really what happens is it digs its tentacles into the startup sequence. So the minute you start the hard drive, it's loaded into memory before anything else, and therefore can fight anything else off. That's why you have to pull the drive, put it in another machine, and fix it that way. The Tango will fix a lot of day-to-day problems. But if you catch one of those really, really virulent ones, then the only way you can get rid of it is to pop that drive out and stick it in another machine, and then work against it. And really, for something like that, call one of the professionals. There's no need to do that for yourself. They don't charge all that much money, and you'll get a clean machine when you're done. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to be infected within the next, say, 4 minutes, but it will, in fact, be clean when you get it back. We find that a lot of people have that problem. They've got it's actually kind of amusing
in a sad way.
Yeah, right. People take the machines home. The first thing they do is the same behavior that got them infected in the first place.
Clicking on links and email, opening websites without knowing.
Well, that's
exactly
the thing I've been
trying
to tell folks. Is, you know, there's, well, what am I doing wrong? How can I prevent this? And you've said, well, just go on the internet. But what's happening is a lot of programs, you know, you're going to websites that you normally would go to, but they're being hacked.
Or they're getting an ad that has malicious software in it.
And, you know, and you can just hover. They've got a hover infection now. You can just literally put your mouse over certain areas, and behind the scenes, because you hovered over that area, it can download the code and infect your machine. You're not even clicking at it. You are then infected.
Right. It's not necessarily that you're doing something wrong, although if you are, you know it, so stop doing it. But it may just be that it's the perils of the internet.
Run a browser like Firefox, install NoScript and AdBlock and FlashBlock, and stop all that extra fun. See, that's the problem. You stop all the fun stuff from running because that's where the bad guys get in too.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites, right here on the great member-supported, with great members, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. I know we've got a full bank of calls, but I wanted to hear the music. If you're, by the way, we do have a full bank of calls. So if you find yourself wandering, calling in, wandering around the unknown wilds of the Greece school district phone system, hang up and call back in a couple of minutes. Our next caller is Don from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question. I have a comment. They were talking about different programs for working with your photos and videos.
Yep. Right. Joe from Greece wanted to know about that stuff.
Yeah, well, right. I played around with a lot of them, including Adobe Elements, and I use two different programs.
Mm-hmm.
One I use is iFriend View,
right,
which is a free program, which works great for the first screening when you're not going to do anything special or minimal editing. It'll do minimal editing right there, and it's so much faster than Elements or any of those other programs.
Right, iFriend View, great product.
Yeah, and then the other program for more advanced work is PaintShop Pro. I mean, it's just one step below the very, very expensive Adobe. Their main one,
Photoshop.
Yeah, Photoshop. Yeah.
PaintShop Pro, very nice product.
It sells for in the $70 range.
Right.
And
I also use
for $100, you can get a video editor along with it. So
right.
I find those products far superior to the Adobe products.
Right. I also use a product called the GIMP. GIMP.
Yeah, that's a
good
program.
One too. Yep.
GNU freebie. Image Manipulation Program, and that's a freebie.
Yeah.
It doesn't do video, but it does do still photos. It does a real nice job.
But I found that the fastest one, like when I came back from a cruise with over several thousand pictures, you want to go through them very fast.
Right.
And I find that the iFriend View is the fastest one I've been able to find for that and for minimal editing.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Don. We appreciate that. Thank you. And so, Joe, if you're paying attention, iFriend View, PaintShop Pro, the GIMP, all excellent products for still photo manipulation. And as Don said, there's also the add-on for video in the bundle.
Yeah, Video Studio from Corel. Looks like Corel also has their Digital Studio, which is photo editing, video editing, DVD burning, and DVD playback.
Easy for you to say.
One program. And that was one of Joe's issues, is he's got all these different programs, each doing different pieces of the puzzle. And
right.
So, you know, he might want to look at the Corel Digital Studio, which does everything in one program.
Right. Our next caller is Gil from Webster, New York. Welcome, Gil. What's your question?
So I had a question about ads, I guess I would say, in general. So when I tuned into your Ustream live today, I noticed that I had acquired some Google ads at the bottom, and they kept popping up and popping up. And so I poked around, and I did this, that, and the other thing, you know, how you manage to do unknown things. And somehow they've gone away. But the reason I was calling was, so can you explain exactly how these things, you know, where is it that these things come from? Where do they live in the browser? Do they come in via the stream? Do they come in some other place?
Well, they're put there by the Ustream folks.
Okay.
One of the deals is we are using Ustream for free. And the way Ustream lets us do that is they put ads across the bottom.
They have a commercial service for $100 a month. You get 100 hours for free. Or, well, 100 hours ad-free. But $100 a month, you know, that can be a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. So the way this works is we're using the free version. And
we're member-supported.
And we're member-supported. So if anybody wants to pay the $1,200, then that will be good.
I'd say I'd give it to you guys. And by the way, congratulations on making your member drive.
Thank you. We're very proud of all of our members.
You going to come down this coming Saturday?
Remains to be seen.
Hey, come on down. Like I say, it's going to be quite a show. And like I say, it's going to be one heck of a sale.
I'll send my heart and or my computer in my stead.
Yeah.
But so in this specific case, Ustream is putting ads in the stream as they go, and YouTube does a lot of the same things to it when you're watching YouTube for free. One of the problems that comes in is with ads that get placed on websites, you know, usually off on the corner of the website, you know, the jumping monkey or, you know, whatever that little ad is. Those ads are, they come from a long chain in creation from the ad buyer, the aggregator, the agency that creates it, you know, and the artist that actually starts it from the beginning. So, you know, a big website might buy an ad service and just fill their page with where the ads they want to go. And so what can happen is that a bad guy can craft a malicious ad using Flash or using Java, some, you know, some web programming language, and then it gets its way up the chain, and suddenly Facebook has a malicious ad on their page. And it used to be you'd have to click on an ad to go to a malicious website, but now they're actually hiding the malicious code right in the ad. And so, as Dave mentioned earlier, just hovering over an ad can cause the malicious software to get infected in your computer. So if you notice, even in the Ustream, when the ad pops up, there's a link for you to go and click to get more information about whatever that ad is. We haven't heard of any bad things getting into Ustream yet, but you never know.
Well, you never know. And mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I have a couple of sites that I put ads on. People make money off of Google ads. I make a decent amount of money, nothing I'm going to retire on, certainly.
Enough to pay for your bandwidth.
Enough to pay for my bandwidth, basically, and so that's nice. Although I've discovered one of my sites, droidlust.com, I have a mobile version of it. And if you go with the mobile version and click on ads with the mobile version, with your mobile web browser on your phone or whatever, I get a lot more money for those. So those of you with a mobile phone, feel free every day to go click on a few ads at Droidlust. I'm really not supposed to say that. Google takes a dim view of people telling people to go click on their ads. But, so that's the deal. Ustream gives us free space and free bandwidth, but they make it back by getting paid, you know, for the ads that people click on. So, That's the reason that we get it for free.
Well, one of the things I did in thrashing around, anytime I notice anything that changes on my machine, this is on my Ubuntu machine, which is where I do my web browsing and so mm-hmm. forth. So I looked up Google Ads, and I found that you can actually change your preferences. There's some cookie that gets stored on your machine that I suspect contains all of those preferences in some way or another.
Right.
So I didn't know what all that affects. Do you know what the cookie actually does? It actually,
well, the cookie from Google actually tracks where you go and what you do, so that when you go to a website, they can show you quote relevant ads unquote. So if you've been, for example, back when I was looking for a car last year about this time, I went to a lot of car sites and looked at a lot of cars, and suddenly, no matter where I went, most of the Google ads were about cars. Well, was that coincidence? No, in fact, it wasn't. Google knows that I was looking for cars and started showing me ads for cars wherever it was even mildly relevant.
It's a little freaky. If you go to set your Google ad preferences, it knows what categories of stuff you've been clicking on. So I'm getting a lot of jazz ads because I go to the jazz website a lot. I get computer ads. I get telecom ads, astronomy and science ads, and it apparently somehow know I'm male. I don't remember.
Because it knows the other stuff you go look at.
Is mostly for men.
Yeah. Google does. Now, when I say Google tracks all that stuff, let's not get conspiratorial about it. It's all being done by the computer, and it's all being done just to show you new ads. The reality is that Google.
And Google's not the only ad service either.
And Google's not the only ad service. But Google gets, even if we just stick with Google, Google gets 100 gazillion pieces of data an hour. Nobody's really looking for you in those data. You're just a trend point to them.
I'm hurt.
I know. It would be almost better if they were searching, if they were watching you, because then that paranoid feeling you have would be legitimized.
Maybe I could charge, right?
There you go.
There you go.
But, you know, get on your cell phone and definitely go check out droidlust.com. Click on some ads and we'll be good. No, so I can't tell you to do that, and I'm not telling you to do that. Thank you.
I appreciate all the information. I mean, trying to understand the great snarl of the Internet and the world out there is anytime you can, you know, straighten out us, those of us who are continually lost, but look for advice from you guys.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
You do run your own website, you can subscribe to Google AdSense and earn money when someone clicks on ads on your page. In fact, what was that guy a couple of years ago? He bought an ad that said, "Are you virus-free? Click here to be infected."
Yep.
Thousands of people clicked there, and he made quite a bit of money on it.
I back for one of my college courses, so I will not say that this was illegal
yet?
At the time. Yeah. I'm almost done.
Are you a master yet?
I'm not quite yet. And I know where that leads. But I actually created what people call a Google trap. I went out and looked to see what Google ads pay the most money. At the time, it happened to be LASIK eye surgery. So I created a site about LASIK eye surgery. And I tracked it. And this was for a class. And I tracked it and everything else. Coincidentally, I made a metric bucket load of cash off of that site while I was doing it. But then I stopped because that's, you know, I really don't know a lot about LASIK eye surgery. And I was making crap up left and right. But, people don't quite get sometimes that the Google ads are not from the website. They're from Google, and we just put them there so we can make a buck here and there.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What can we do for you today?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. I've got a question in regards to two of the programs that you have, Nick, in the Security Tango, the award-winning, world-renowned Security Tango.
Thank you.
Recently, Avast upgraded its version to now where it has a new logo. It has a pleasant female voice telling you that the program has been updated as opposed to the old voice, male voice.
Yeah, it's not quite as shocking as it used to be at 2 in the morning.
It's like Uncle Dave doing a story hour with a female voice. Would be the same. But anyway, here's the question. Is there any benefit to pay the money and get the professional version of Avast? What will that do? But also just note that I did take your recommendation about a month or so ago, Nick, and I upgraded my super anti-spyware to real-time monitoring.
Yeah.
Is this going to be an overkill if I decide to pay for the better version of Avast?
No, because they do two different things.
Right. And on the Avast front page, it tells you what the differences are between each of the products.
Yeah, and one of them is real-time monitoring. Of more things.
And Avast Pro sandboxes your browser so that it theoretically it's better protected. And then there's the Avast Internet Security that does more anti-malware and spam.
Well, just like if you went that far, then it would overlap.
But just here's the big difference is what we recommend, which is free, is good. But by paying for the other versions, what it's affording you is, one, the ability to not constantly have to go and look for the updates.
Yes, I understand that.
It'll do that for you. Well, I'm telling this for the other folks out there that are listening. You know, that's another reason why to, like you have done, is go ahead and pay for some of them, because now you don't have to worry about, oh, once a week I got to go out there and get the latest update and then run it. It's doing that automatically because you've got the paid version. So that's what it's affording you and all our other listeners.
And it also does keep the company in business so they can keep selling
free
versions.
My question is this. By buying the real-time better product from Avast, am I going to be stepping on my own toes, meaning I have super anti-spyware running real-time, and then I'm going to have Avast running real-time
something
else.
Yes, you will, because if you buy Avast Pro,
Avast Pro is only antivirus.
No,
Avast Internet Security is also anti-malware.
Avast Pro gives you continuous protection against viruses and spyware. It checks mail. Keeps you protected from chat infections, stops attacks.
Don't chat, and then most of my mail service goes through like an intermediate point, such as Hotmail or Gmail.
Hotmail is notoriously horrible.
Okay.
Gmail is good.
Okay.
And it also protects you from suspicious websites and et cetera, et cetera. So really, yes, if you were to get a Avast Pro, it would probably, I think, step on the toes of the anti-spyware.
Super anti-spyware.
But I would say get Avast Pro and run it.
Okay.
Because it does protect you against more things, and it also sandboxes your website, and it gives you...
And as we said earlier, not every program can find everything.
Right.
Yeah, I know that. At work, the IT person still likes SpyBot, and even though we do have malware bytes, that'll come up clean, and then she will run SpyBot, and it'll pick up something, write media, which is, I guess, one of the things for maybe one of the toolbars. They sort of monitor, like what Nick was saying, ads and stuff like that. So SpyBot will pick up something that malware bytes will say, it's okay.
Which is why I tend to put so many of those things. Everybody says, well, you're kind of duplicating yourself. No, the Tango is designed the way it is because not every program catches everything.
But let me ask you this. I mean, something like Write Media, which is what I did a search, has something to do with one of the toolbars. May it be Yahoo or Google toolbar or something like that. Is that really going to, I mean, yes, it monitors and gives you ads and stuff like that. Is it going to kill your machine?
Well, it's a privacy issue. It's a security issue. It may not kill your machine, but some programs are a little more... liberal about what they call spyware.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it is spying on you because it's tracking what websites you're going to. But
it's only your choice as to whether or not you run it. In terms of cycles, it doesn't take a lot of them, but it does take some. How much other stuff are you running, right? That's the way that works.
Okay, thank you for your advice.
All right, thank you, Bodan. Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Cheryl back on the line from Rochester, New York. As we remember earlier, she called about Linksys Wireless N, desktop, laptop, iTouch. Changed the password, couldn't get on. And Cheryl, what did you find out?
Well, I want to thank you for helping me. The two things I did that worked was I went in and you had mentioned that the administration password and the wireless security password had to be the same, and they weren't, so I changed that.
They don't have to be the same, but you set them separately.
Are we writing this down so we know what to say the next time somebody calls?
Yeah. Right. We got one right?
Yeah!
But then I went and removed the networks from the iTouch and the laptop and just put them back in again, and then I was able to get on. So I wanted to thank you.
Perfect. Glad we were able to help you.
Good. Thanks a lot.
Shocked, but glad.
That's two in a row.
Okay. Yep. Excellent.
Thank you very much.
I'm writing that down. Both our suggestions worked.
We got to compile a book.
Yeah.
Well, we need. This is a red letter day for us. We made a suggestion, and it actually worked. Thank you, Cheryl, for calling back and not embarrassing us on the air. It's getting more tricky to get on the air both securely and with all the additional possibilities like wireless, etc.
And the computers are trying to make it easier by remembering passwords for you, but then when you need to type it in yourself, you've forgotten. And if you change it, now the computer's remembering the wrong password.
Right.
So that's where her problem came from.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Our next caller is Mark from Irondequoit. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
I have what I think is a hardware problem, and I wanted to see what you guys think. First of all, computer runs fine, apparently. No blue screen or reboot. It just shuts down with no warning. Then when I start it back up, it goes through the reboot, checks everything. When I look in the Windows logs for troubleshooting, it just says failure.
Does it shut down? It doesn't
go into a reboot. It just stops dead, and that's it.
It powers itself off?
Yes, without even a blue screen.
Could be a power supply.
Power supply, yeah.
Okay, that was my thought. Now, it has a Q6600 quad-core chip, and when I looked it up on the Internet, I found some reference to saying that some of the chips were flawed.
Well, that was the other issue I was going to ask you. What I've seen also that'll cause that, and it's more or less the machine protecting itself, is blown capacitors. If you take the side of it off...
That's what I was hoping, and not hoping, but that's what I was looking for. I opened it up, made sure all the fans were moving, and made sure all the capacitors looked like they were the right shape. Nothing was bulging or popped out or anything.
So nothing's even leaking underneath? I found some of them that leak from underneath.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they don't necessarily bulge. Yeah, they're supposed to bulge at the top, but I've had a few in the past couple of weeks, some e-machines, they're literally bulging out at the bottom and leaking.
Now, how do you determine by troubleshooting what is a power supply and what is a motherboard?
Well, in my shop, it's easy. I just grab another power supply and throw it in.
You replace the part and see if that fixes the problem.
Yeah.
Now, because, I mean, power supplies generally are pretty cheap, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've done RAM. I've done video cards and all that. If you're careful, is it something you can easily do on your own?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
And in fact,
would you do that first and hope it's not the motherboard and go from there?
Yeah, because the power supply is a lot cheaper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you just got one for the next machine.
Yep.
In fact, any issues you've seen with that particular chip or anything? I know it's an Acer machine, and they don't have a stellar repair rate, so.
Well, any chip can fail. It's just, are you lucky enough to be you?
Ah.
Right, right. They're, you know, they have, what, 5-10 year life on them, but that means some will fail in 20 years and some will fail right away.
Yep.
You know, it depends on where you land in the curve.
It's a roll of the dice.
Yep.
Okay, so it's way less money to roll the dice on the power supply and then go
exactly.
From there.
Yep. Okay. Exactly.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Have a good one.
Yep.
This is the toughest part is troubleshooting things like that. If you've got a bad RAM chip, there's software that you can run to find it. You know, if you've got a bad power supply, well,
there's a hardware RAM tester that we looked at buying once. It was $5,000 because there's 127 different types of RAM cards and new ones made every day. You know, we've gone through the DDR, DDR2, DDR3, and it's, you know, these hardware testers are just too expensive to justify purchasing.
Right.
So you replace the RAM and see if the problem goes away. That's a lot easier. And then you send it back to your RAM vendor and they test it.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, our next caller is apparently Big Bill from Webster, New York.
That's what he said.
You're not a doctor, are you? Because that would be a really terrible nickname for a doctor.
Now, the subject today is antivirus 2010.
Ooh, yep.
Yeah, it's the bane of my existence anymore.
Yeah.
I've had 6 computers in the last couple of weeks that are all infected with this. And one of the questions, and unfortunately a lot of times before somebody gives you the computer, it's buried itself so deep that even when you get rid of the antivirus, it's changed all the system settings, and you end up having to wipe the hard drive anyway.
Right.
But one of the questions I always get from people is, how did this get on my computer? And I've done some searching on the web, and I haven't seen much. Are these coming in from these free download sites, or do you guys have any insight as to how people get this?
Multitude of places.
Yeah, as we've been saying, there's a bunch of different ways you can get it. You can go to a download site. You can click on a link in an email. You can click on a link on a website. You can get a drive-by ad, which is the one where all you have to do is roll over it with your mouse and it'll run.
So it's using multiple paths to get
multiple paths, and that's the way they work. And a lot of times, they're using social engineering as well. How many times have you gotten the, "Hey, I'm stuck. We got this at work." From what purports to be a colleague, right? I'm stuck in India. I can't get home. Can you send me some money? Click on this link. And you click on the link, and it doesn't matter what's on the next page because you're already infected.
And even if people are vigilant in their surfing, there have been malicious ads that have been stuck on Facebook and Twitter and legitimate websites that get malicious ads that infect people.
It gets very frustrating because, you know, you get all the latest antivirus stuff on your computer, and you download all the spyware stuff, and it gets on anyway.
Yep.
Right. Right,
almost like, why bother?
Well,
and that sort of goes back to my joke earlier. Don't use Windows. The infection vector is much much lower with Linux or Mac. It's still there, but it's a lower incidence so far. But of course, if everyone switches, then it might go up.
Right.
Okay.
But
the other thing I'd like to ask you is, what's your opinion of Microsoft Security Essentials?
It's not terrible. But it's not one we recommend.
Because you got to rely on Microsoft to do updates. Heck, they can't even do their updates for their programs in a timely manner.
Well, tell me about it.
I mean, you know, they sit there, oh, well, we knew about this problem, 6 months ago, and we're finally putting a patch out to it.
I had to install XP this week from a CD, and then it took me 6 hours to download all the updates since the CD was created.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's much fun.
There's a fake Microsoft Security Extensions Trojan going around too. That's how a lot of infections come through.
The ones
I was worried about was that people would because it's Microsoft, they would make special efforts to try to get through the Security Essentials.
Right, but yes, and that's true, and that's why we recommend different sets of programs in the Security Tango.
We've even seen that with the big companies like Norton and McAfee. The bad guys won't release something until it gets past the big known quantities, which is one of the reasons we recommend the smaller programs like Avast and AVG.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've had anti-VIR on my computer for a number of years, and I'm pretty happy
is good.
With it.
Yep. All right. Excellent.
Unfortunately, there's a fake antivir running around, too. The bad guys.
Yes, wonderful. Careful. That's all we need. All right, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Bill.
And that's the problem, is that the bad guys have picked up on the reputation of all the good guys' software, and there's a fake antivir, there's a fake malware bytes, there's fake software that is so easy for people to accidentally install that they think they're protecting themselves, and now they're infected worse.
Right. Yep. One other thing I'd like to interject here, because we're coming to the top of the hour here and going to be leaving soon. Remind folks that this coming Saturday, a week from today, come and join us. We're going to be live at the Memorial Art Gallery from doing our show from 12 to 2, and they're going to be having what we're calling the first annual holiday show and sale. There's going to be a lot of craftsmen, artisans, and other great businesses having stuff there for you to buy and look over. And the advantage of coming to our show is you're going to be able to get a sneak preview, because they're going to let you in the door a little earlier. So you can be in on part of the fun. Is we see if Nick will dance again. He did it once. And you never know, maybe you'll get an offer and do it again. But we are going to be doing our show live from 12 to 2 at the Memorial Art Gallery, and the tickets are a mere $5. And you're going to have some great folks, like I said, artisans and everything else, and come and meet us. As
we'd
scary
love
as we
to
are,
see you
I
there.
Mean, we all have faces for radio, as we've the three of us always said, but every so often Rob and them get a little crazy and they let us go out in public. And we'd love to have you folks come down. You can get tickets right now if you go to the www.jazz901.org website and secure some tickets. And I believe they'd be available at the door also. But, you know, hey, don't wait. Come on down, and we'd love to see you folks. Meet and greet.
Yeah, it'd be great. It would be really great. We love to see our fans, to have them come down. We've been out 3 times this year, and we've seen a number of our fans, but we know there are a bunch of you out there who haven't been around yet. Next week would be a great time to combine seeing us with checking out one of the best art sales in town.
And I mean, you know, it is coming up on the holidays, and you know, who knows? You might walk off with a real good gift at a real good price, but you won't know unless you take the time and come on down and check it out. We'd really like to see you folks all there.
All right. That's it. We apparently are done for another week. You have now wasted 2 solid hours of your life listening to sound bites. We want to thank all those of you who called in. For those of you who didn't call in, I don't know why you didn't. Well, maybe you tried and you couldn't get through. This was one of those weeks. We will see you next week at the Memorial Art Gallery. I can't wait to shake your hand in person. So stop on down. Get your ticket online at jazz901.org. Come on down and join the party next Saturday. We're going to have a great time. It's going to be live at the Mag, and it's going to be lots and lots of fun. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank you for spending 2 solid hours of your life wasting that time with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here are the club calendar highlights.